Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there! Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower-than-low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Trying to get by Benning. Darnell Nurse left it in the corner. Gets up center. Perry scores! Corey Perry!
Well, you're able to shake away from Solani. It's given away to Solani. Around in front. Score! Teemu Solani with the steal.
Three of the fans want one. Score! Off the floor! On the board! Paul Kariya!
All right, we're back with the post-game show to kick off the new year with the Forever Mighty podcast. It's Eddie joined by Steven. Steven, how's it going? How was Christmas? How was New Year's? How's everything going?
It was good, man. I don't know. I don't have anything funny to say
just,
right now.
Just act like we haven't caught up off the podcast. So
So, I mean, look, the thing that I think it's most important to talk about right now is that we talk about sexy Mrs. Met. Mm-hmm. This is very important to me personally, as someone who, you know, I'm a feminist. I believe in the rights of Mrs. Metz everywhere to, I don't know what I'm talking about anymore. Do you hear about that one chick selling parts?
I did. I heard about that one, unfortunately. It's the best. Which is not surprising.
The two things I needed to mention.
Because was there not somebody who, like, sold bathwater at some point, too?
Yeah. So, yeah.
I wouldn't be surprised.
That's all happened, yeah.
Nothing is surprising anymore, but yeah, that whole Miss Met thing was new to me until you brought it up today, which
was I couldn't
surprising,
believe it.
But
absolutely killed me.
I love it.
So yeah, man, holidays were good. New Year was good. How was everything for you, sir?
Well, everything was going pretty good, but now I feel like I'm getting sick. So you know what that is. And then Ontario is going into another semi-lockdown, which is always fun. So
Forever Mighty's gonna have to tweet out tomorrow that you've been placed in COVID protocols.
Yeah, along with every other Ducks player apparently at this point. So Trevor Zegras tweeting out the Mickey Mouse locked behind a door thing today because he wants to get out of isolation and back playing for the Ducks. I think that we all want
Dude,
that.
Dude, have
too.
You? So this is not whatever. It doesn't matter. So have you noticed that since the Milano Zegras goal? Trevor Zegras, like, once he got all that positive feedback initially and, like, response to him, he has really, like, stepped up, it feels like, how active he is on social media, like, how kind of cheeky he's being with some of that stuff.
I think it's an All-Star game highlight reel.
Yes, like, that dude, that was awesome. That. Like, it just feels like he really did kind of have his moment, and, like, if he wins the Calder, it feels like the Milano-Zegras thing is going to be the moment that it changes, because that is just such a flashpoint in kind of, I feel like, the Ducks season. And so I just think for me, like, the way that he's grown, even off the ice, just in the time since then, has been
After that goal, he got like a crash course in handling all different types of media over like a week and a half, because he was on like probably 15 to 20 different shows where he went on as a guest to talk about the goal. And then after that, it was the goal plus towards his comments. So he was on a bunch of different. So I'm sure he got a crash course from the Ducks social and communications department on handling the media. So he's a pro now, clearly. But yeah, I mean, like, he's been more engaged, like you said. Like, just, we don't see a lot of the Ducks players kind of Max Jones probably more than anybody, and now Zegras is kind of getting involved in that. Obviously, just. Yeah, just engaging, just being out there and having a personality, which is a little bit different from the nothing. And this is no slight to Getzlaff and Perry, but you know what we
were—that's not
we're used to.
Like, Ryan Miller is the biggest poster at this point, or Joffrey Lupul. Joffrey Lupul was super fun on Twitter.
Kessler, to some extent, not like on his own social media, but like, you remember Between Two Ferns and different things like that, right?
The two Zambonis. So. Yeah. Those were fun.
Oh, yeah. Between Two Zambonis. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, he was kind of that. But yeah, in terms of, you know, on their own social media, having their own kind of voice and personality, it was really just Max Jones. And now Zegras being a part of that is nice. But it would be nice to get him back in the ice. I think for Milano, this was his best game since Zegras has been out of the lineup. Like, I was fully prepared to come into this game if Milano didn't do anything. Not to get on him and be like, oh, man, he's nothing without Zegras, but to kind of highlight the impact that Trevor Zegras has on that line and on this team. But it was nice to see him get going, and he wasn't on the top line, right? He was playing with Steele and Lettieri, so for him to get going and play well, and then obviously to score the power play goal, it was nice to see him get kind of back in the score sheet and have a really good game. And other than Terry getting the hat trick tonight, he was probably the Ducks' best forward.
Yeah, I mean, like, we should probably just say this now. There's all the obvious caveats about this basically being an alumni game for the AHL teams, almost. But that being said, there were still, you know, legitimate NHLers on that ice tonight. I really do think if you take the score out of it, I think Milano had the best night of anybody, and that's not to minimize Troy Terry's impact on the game, because I thought he was fantastic. But I just think, like, you know, I kind of tweeted about this the other night, that, like, the last game, to me, was the game that he proved he could probably be. That's the game, to me, where I saw him be a guy who can drive his own line, right? Like, even when he was playing with Getze and he was playing super dynamic, and him and Henry kind of had that chemistry and all that stuff, like, I don't felt like he ever looked like the guy who was driving the bus. And the last game, I thought he completely took over, and he really did step into the role that was kind of left by Zegras. And this game, I think, was Milano doing the same thing. Yeah. Like, Milano was everywhere. Like, he was engaged physically. Like, he was getting into it with Ristolainen in the corner. He's trying the flip. You know, I just thought he was super active and super engaged tonight. And it was, yeah, I think, like you said, like, I would say it's probably one of his best games as a Duck, period, even with Zegras, just because of how impactful he was on his own. Like, you know, it wasn't the interplay between him and anybody else. It was just, he just went out there and played really well.
He did everything that he normally does when you see him on a line with Zegras. Both him and Zegras are really good at hounding the puck carrier and pressuring and forechecking well and hard. And he did that in this game. And then just creativity, like you said, kind of flipping the puck from behind the net to get the puck out in front of it into a high-scoring area, and just really engaged in both sides of the ice, which is what you want to see from him. And I mean, somebody has to lead the way right now, and if it can't all be Troy Terry every night when you have no Getzlaff and no Henrik and no Zegras, so it's nice to see Milano getting involved. I thought Maxime Comtois looked pretty good, too. He picked up the lone assist at the end of the night, and, you know, the production is still going to be the big factor for him, but I thought he looked better in this game, and I think when Getzlaff comes back, you know, the way he kind of showed out with Troy Terry tonight, and I think they had some good chemistry and Comtois looked a little bit more comfortable out there. We could see Getzlaff, Comtois, and Terry once Getzlaff slots back in the lineup, hopefully soon.
Yeah, I would love to see that lineup. I think that would be, you know, I think as a wing pair, I think Terry and Comtois make a lot of sense, just because of their styles and their fit together. And then having him with Getze obviously makes a ton of sense because of his playmaking ability. But I think since he's come back, I think because he was part of COVID protocol, kind of right as soon as he got back injured.
Yeah, I think so.
He's looked very, very good since he's come back. You know, he's looked a lot more like the player he was last year. Like, I know, you know, some of his underlying metrics as far as his impact and stuff were kind of steady, but I just don't think he looked like the same guy that we saw last year lead the team in points. And I think these last few games, even though, you know, other than the assist, the production hasn't been there, he's looked a lot better. He's looked a lot more, I guess engaged is kind of the word I keep finding right now.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, he played the game against Arizona. That was his first game back. And then missed the game against Vancouver and then played the last two, Colorado and Philadelphia. Or, no, he would have missed another one, right? I would assume. What was it? Wow, I can't remember this. Vegas. Missed Vancouver and Vegas are the two games that he missed. And then comes in against Colorado, picks up an assist. I thought he played good in that game. And then obviously the assist tonight on the empty netter. But outside of that, again, I thought he played a lot better. So it's encouraging, right? And we still haven't seen in fully optimized lineup yet where we get, you know, Getzlaff, Comtois, Terry, Zegras, Milano, you know, Raquel, Lindstrom, Silverberg, Henrique, something like that where we can see – you know, everybody healthy in the top nine the way, you know, the way the Ducks want to see it, the way we want to see it, you know, everybody that can contribute into the lineup. And really then the only guy that, you know, we're waiting to get back at this point then from an injury is Max Jones, right? And other than that, Everybody is here. The defense is healthy right now, which is one good thing. John Gibson is healthy. So now it's not so much injuries. It's just what every other team is dealing with right now. It's the COVID protocols with Zegras and Getzlaff and Henrique and, I mean, I would assume, what is it, Thursday or Friday is the next game that we'll see both of these guys back at this point, or, you know, at least Zegras and Getzlaff.
Oh, Thursday. Yeah, it's Thursday. Obviously, I know that.
I've been out of the loop Detroit so game. Much with all the COVID protocol games and games getting postponed. Like, somebody tweeted out earlier in the day, and they said it feels like preseason because, like, there's only like two or three games a day when there's supposed to be like seven or eight because so many are postponed. And then the guys who are playing, like you've got a bottom six like you had for the Ducks today. We've got like Danny O'Regan and Bryce Kindup and Buddy Robinson and Bo Grew playing. And like you have that for most of the teams right now because like Edmonton just had McDavid go into COVID protocol. Toronto just had Matthews go into COVID protocol. So like all these teams right now, it just feels like you're watching preseason or like late playoff push where like guys are getting benched.
Yeah, like honestly, I think preseason is the right way to put it. Because like it's been one of those things where I'm almost like just kind of during when this COVID thing has kind of been really bad right now as far as impacting the season. It kind of just for me turned into a thing where I almost just kind of waited until like the afternoon to figure out which games were actually playing. And like I completely kind of ignored the schedule because games were getting postponed, games were getting changed. You know what I mean? And it was just like, it's honestly felt kind of like a winter break for the league as far as just the attitude, like just, you know, around everything. It's just kind of weird and blasé right now. And, you know, so to get a 4-1 win tonight was great.
Yeah, in a game that I was, I know they had to go forward with it. Like Philly had already made the trip out there. I don't think there's any way they're going to ever postpone this game, but like you get the announcement before game that I think it was Drew and Provorov go into COVID protocol for Philly. And then the Ducks didn't have Zegras coming back or Getzlaff coming back yet, and they have still all their guys in COVID protocol. And they were Dallas Aikens mentioned earlier in the day that they only had 10 forwards and they had to call more guys up from San Diego. Thank God it was a home game. Otherwise, it probably wouldn't have gone forward. They would have or just had to play probably with 10 forwards and move a forward up onto the wing. This Hunter Drew is potentially earning a call-up soon.
Dude, I really thought that was going to be close to what happened just because, you know, like logistically, we've talked about it before as far as him having that defensive, you know, growing up. They drafted him as a defenseman, you know, so he's kind of got that versatility in that way. But more than anything, like, it was just like, it would be very funny to me if, like, he was just randomly the one guy that was kind of healthy and not in protocol. And they're just like, oh, all right, fine. Because it would kind of be the perfect game for him to step into.
Hopefully soon. But yeah, San Diego has their own COVID issues right now. I don't know who is in protocol because it's not really like the NHL where we get updates on that constantly, where we know who's in and who's not in protocol. But I would hope that, you know, I hope that he's not, and hopefully he gets a call up soon, because I know you've definitely been waiting for him to get a call up. A game against Philly, too, would have been a good game for him to come in and play.
Exactly.
But, hopefully soon. But yeah, when you've got, I don't know what else he has to do. Like, Kindup's been great, and I'm glad to see him get his NHL debut, a guy who wasn't drafted. It's always nice to see those guys get a shot and play a game. But, like, O'Regan, Kindup, Buddy Robinson, and Bo Grew. And I know Grew has played this year, so maybe you can take him out of that. And even Robinson has been on the fourth line recently, so fair enough. But, yeah, Kindup and O'Regan get the call up over Tracy or Perreault or Drew or others that, you know, we don't know if they're in protocol or not. But it would have been nice to see those guys. I know, like, the spots in the roster is still kind of filled, so it would have been, like, a third-line center spot, really, for who to play in. So it's not like you want to call up Tracy to play, you know, fourth line left wing. It makes a bit more sense for Kindop to play there. But I would like to know kind of who was in the mix there, because there are a lot of guys in San Diego that I still want to see play.
Yeah, I mean, you know, I think as soon as we heard that it was going to be one of those things where they were definitely going to have to call someone up, everybody kind of was hoping it would be Tracy and Perreault. And, like, I don't know if this is right, but I feel like we kind of had a sense a week or so before Drysdale and Zegras got called up last year that it was going to happen. And I just don't feel like there's been any of that talk about them coming up at all. Yeah. Like, that conversation seems to be entirely within the fan base, which, like, makes sense because you see how well this team is doing. You look at the obvious skill that they have and you're just like, yeah, like, bring them up. But as far as, like, kind of from, you know, the team, like, it hasn't felt like there's been any of that talk at all.
Yeah, and they've cooled off a little bit too. Like, not to say they're playing bad, but from the way Perreault was playing early on, and then Tracy had his kind of spurt there too. It's like when Zegras and Drysdale were there and that talk started coming up, is like they played 10 or 12 games down there and were getting, you know, multiple point nights, like, pretty much every night, and were clearly, like, the two best players on that team and some of the best players in the league at that point. Like, Perreault and Tracy both have 17 points in 22 games, which isn't bad, and it's a great step forward for both of them this year. But it's not quite, you know, oh, we got it. There's no way we have to call this guy up right now. Like, he's playing out of his mind. We need to give him a chance. And also for San Diego, like, those are their two best players and really, like, the only consistent offensive players they have right now. So to call them up and just to come in for a game to play the fourth line against Philadelphia is probably not the best option for them right now, even if the goals aren't – I don't think the goals are playing tonight, but, you know, either way, like, it's not the right time, I don't think, to call these guys up. I'd love to see them play, but I think you can plan a little bit better where later on in the season, if guys have moved out the door, you can actually give them a proper introduction to the team and a proper shot in a position for them to do well.
No, I agree. I definitely, like, I think there's a way to set the table a little bit more. I mean, I don't think that they care what the circumstances are that they get called up into. You know what I mean? And I think that's like more than fair. But I do think that you can definitely put them in a better situation, not coming off a losing streak, that kind of stuff. You know, hopefully, you know, drop them into like a homestand where they can get two or three games in a week. Without having to travel or anything like that. So, I mean, they're going to be up at some point. Yeah. Like, even if it's just for five or six games, like, I just have a hard time thinking we're not going to see them at all. And that's fun. But, like, to your point about them lighting it up, like, Minnesota just called up Margot Rossi and Matthew Boldy, and they're expected – I don't know if Minnesota played tonight or they play
Thursday,
tomorrow or something.
I picked them both up in fantasy, so I'm ready to go for that game.
But, like, you know, like they were saying, like, I think Boldy had like 27 points in 21 games in AHL. I think he plays for, I think the team is Iowa.
Yeah, he's 10 and 10 this year. And then, yeah, like 14 and 10 last year. So he's been unreal. You know, and Boldy and leads them in scoring.
Marco Rossi's
or Brassi leads them in scoring, yeah.
But, yeah, like, and so, like, you know, and then they're kind of getting it for a COVID call up, but they're also kind of riding this wave right now as well. So,
yeah. Yeah, and they're guys you could stick up to, right? Like, there's an actual spot where they could come in. Like, in the case for Minnesota, too, right now, like, Eriksson Ek is their number one center. He's out week to week right now with an injury. So Ryan Hartman is their number one center right now. And then Frederick Goodrow is their second-line center. Like, it is a logical time for Rossi to come up right now. He's over a point per game in the AHL. Can literally either, if it's not first line center, if they want to keep Hartman there because Hartman's played well this year, he can jump into their top six. And Boldy can jump right into the top nine with the guys that they have out and have, you know, out with COVID protocol and out with injury right now. So it makes sense for them. And I think the Ducks will get to that point eventually with Perreault and Tracy where there's a time that makes sense to call them up to give them the proper introduction to the team because it's, you know, it's not the same situation. But with Trevor Zegras, you would have never called them up if the Ducks had no way to jump him into the top nine at the very least, right, and play him in a position where he's going to succeed. You don't want to call these guys up and play them on the fourth line in a game where you're already understaffed and they're not going to get a lot of ice time.
Yeah, I mean, like, do you just drop Marco Rossi onto Kaprizov's line?
I mean, yeah.
Do you just play him with Kaprizov?
I think,
like, right off the jump? Because you got to figure, right? He's a number one center prospect, which means he is at some point going to play with Kaprizov. Now, whether they end up going the Chicago route and splitting him up to have two strong lines, that's a different conversation. But at some point, they're going to play him with Kaprizov.
Yeah, I would think so. I think it's really hard to not play Ryan Hartman there because he's got 28 points in 31 games this year. Like, I feel like, you know, it's a slight to that guy to just be like, hey, listen, this kid who's not played one NHL game yet, we're going to take you off the top line. He's going to play there. I think in the Wild's case, like, even with Rossi going into the second line, which I think he will, I don't think there's any way Frederick Goodrow plays there.
So that's what? Felino
and Fiala. So even that, Fiala, right? Sure. Like, playing with a shooter like Fiala, I think works well for Rossi, and Fiala's starting to get hot with three goals in his last two games. So I think for Minnesota, it makes sense. And DB Lowry mentioned in the chat too, like, Minnesota waived Victor Rask to make room for Marco Rossi too, which isn't a big move. Rask hasn't been great for them, but it is some vote of confidence there, right, that they moved a guy out to bring him up. But enough Minnesota Wild talk. I know Steve and I both love the Wild. We have a few Patreon shows planned around the Wild, but get back into some of the Ducks action. Obviously, there's three games we missed and haven't covered. All right, we're not going to go in depth about them, but the Ducks lost all three of those, Vegas, Vancouver, and Colorado. The Vegas game was just awful in terms of, you know, the Ducks just got hammered in that game. I think what total shots were like 48 or something for Vegas at the end of the game. It was not a fun game to watch. I think the reaction of that after that game from a lot of people was a little bit too much. I know, Vegas is a great team. They're starting to get on a roll, and we're all still kind of in that zone where, like, okay, the Ducks are good, but are they, you know, when are the wheels going to fall off? I think we've slowly kind of moved away from that, like, 10 games into the season where we were like, okay, this is going to fall apart at some point. I think, like, we're kind of in the point now where we know they're a pretty good team and they can at least compete for a playoff spot. But I feel like the reaction after that game was just unreal. Like, the Ducks got beat by a good team, a team that they notoriously struggle against. And everybody's like, oh, nope, they're back. The Ducks are bad again. They're going to...
Yeah, I mean, I feel like it's situational, right? I just feel like Vegas is one of those teams that gets under Anaheim fan skins, but, like, they get under a lot of team skins. You know, they walked into the league and they made it all the way to the finals. Like, you know what I mean? And they've been a competitive playoff team ever since. So, like, I get that part of it. But, you know, hey, like, to one extent, I think there's something to be said for that kind of, like, taking it on the chin as far as, like, okay, so, like, we still have a way to go before we get to, like, where the real contenders are, but I also think that you can go overboard and be a little too, they're a fucking lottery team now. Yeah. It's like, no, they're 500 right now as far as points percentage. Like, I mean, now they'll be under 500, I guess, for the first time this season.
But they're almost firmly in a top three spot in the Pacific just because just because Edmonton has like completely fallen off. I think Edmonton still, if they win all their games in hand, they've got three in hand, that they would be 1 point in front of the Ducks. They'd have 44. But it's really Vegas, Anaheim, Calgary right now, unless Edmonton can get things going here, and they don't have McDavid until he gets a positive COVID test at any point here. So the Ducks, they deserve to be in playoff contention. I'm looking at the standings now, and the Kings are actually sneaking their way back into a playoff spot too, which is...
Well, that's what I was going to say. Like, like, how far out of it is Vancouver? Because, like, the Kings I'm not going to necessarily trust, but, like, Vancouver has the high-end talent to go on a streaky... run, especially with, I love watching you fight with your microphone. This is the funniest thing in the world right now. But like, especially with Demko playing so well in Vancouver, you know, they definitely have all the pieces to go on a streaky run. But like, at this point, I think Anaheim needs to kind of, I mean, once you get healthy, figure on what their best 12 is. And just run with that for the rest of the season, because like, they're committed to competing at this point. What is going on, Eddie? I mean, the only people that can hear this are watching, so like, this is very funny, but like, for anybody listening after the fact, Eddie had to completely take his microphone off of his desk. Then it looked like it was trying to attack him, so he was like holding it in front of him, falling backwards over himself, and now he's maybe got it put back, but he's not sure.
Oh, yeah, we're back.
You okay? Oh,
I just saw it like slowly tilting towards me. I'm like, oh god, this isn't good. It's falling apart.
Dude, that was so funny to just watch you fight with that thing for like 3 minutes.
Oh man, it just that I forgot lefty loosey, righty tighty, and it just. Everything went out the window at that point. So.
Is that why it came off completely? Is because you turned?
No. It just started falling because I got it attached to like not a flat surface, so it just slowly fell off, I guess. But then I was trying to undo it and put it back so it would fit, and I tightened it too much, and yeah, it didn't work out that well. The things that happen on the first show
this is
back.
The worst episode in the world. But I don't know. What the hell were we talking about?
The Ducks
about?
Are good. They're in a playoff spot.
They're in a playoff spot. So, like, you know, at this point, like I said, I think they just need to try to find their best 12 forwards and go with that. I think their best six defensemen is pretty much set at this point, unless they're looking to move somebody out. I think it's pretty established who the six are going to be for the rest of the year, assuming everybody stays healthy.
Yeah. And we saw a future Duck, James Van Riemsdyk, playing tonight.
Yeah.
Stoned by John Gibson a few times and then had that late deflection that went right through Gibby's pads and just missed the post.
Yeah, that one was wild. I wondered at first just because I couldn't quite tell. Like, I was wondering if it was one of those ones where he just caught it with like the blade of his skate. But it just went right through him and never touched him. So
Gibby had a good game too tonight, so it was nice to see him back into playing.
Yes, very much so.
After a few kind of tough games, the one thing that we didn't get to cover over the break was the World Junior Championship was supposed to go on, and I think Canada played two games, I think. Mason McTavish had 5 points, was co-leading the tournament, I think, in scoring with Connor Bedard and a few other guys. I think Brad Lambert had 5 points as well. But he looked like one of the best players at that tournament, which is what you kind of expected. He looked like a man amongst boys, which is, again, for a guy who's like 6'3", 215, and he's playing against, you know, 18, 19-year-old kids who are, you know, around 170, 180 pounds. It kind of makes sense that the two best players for Canada were probably the two most NHL-ready guys in Owen Power and Mason McTavish, so it's not... it's not surprising. Then a super freak athlete in Connor Bedard, who's just going to be unbelievable. So it makes sense that McTavish was one of those players. So unfortunately, we don't get to review his play there and look at, I think tomorrow would have been the gold medal game and the bronze medal game, if I remember in the schedule correctly. But Mason McTavish is on the long list for Canada at the Olympics. So that'll be nice to see him go there and play.
Is there...
He's going to be playing against the almighty Chinese national team.
It's just so funny to me that it's like, all right, the World Juniors, we have to cancel it because of the COVID stuff and everything's getting bad. Also, these kids who are all just at World Junior, we're going to send these same kids to the Olympics. And it's like, how does any of this make sense? I don't know.
Yeah, I don't get it. I know the big thing for a lot of the NHL players and some of the guys that didn't want to go was that like quarantine period that they'd have to potentially stay in China for like 2 weeks or something to quarantine. If they got another positive test, it would be another 2 weeks. So I could see why they didn't want to do that. But yeah, I mean, it's a tough situation to throw these kids into. I think for them, it's a great opportunity. I'd love to see Mason McTavish play. Again, it's similar to the Terry situation when he went and played, right? Where like, yeah, it's great. That's They're exactly playing at the Olympics, saying. But it's not the Olympics is what we're normally used to, right? Like the only tough team per se that you're going to face is Russia because they're going to, you know, they're going to bring a fully stacked team of their KHL superstars, and a lot of their players from the World Juniors will probably get a shot. Guys like Matvei Michkov and a few of their other top guys. So they'll bring a fully stacked team even without NHL players. So that's the real competition, and they'll probably win the tournament as well. But for McTavish, it would be nice to see him go there. I just weigh up, is it almost better for him to just stay in the OHL and not have to risk, you know, positive COVID tests and missing times there? I know he has to serve a suspension, so maybe this just works out and he can just serve his suspension while playing in the Olympics. it could be something like that. But I just think personally on a safer note for him to finish out the rest of the year and have a good year in the OHL, maybe it's better for him to stay behind. But I would love to see him, you know, pull on the Canada jersey for the Olympics. I think it'd be a great opportunity for him, and one that, you know, in the NHL, this might be the only opportunity he gets to play for Canada at the Olympics. So it would be it'd be a tough one to pass up. I think I know it's a tough situation to go into, though, to go into China and have to deal with all the everything surrounding COVID right now, and have to go over there and try and play some hockey. So it's a tough one.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know how I feel about the Olympics and the pros going, and how much I'm not. I would rather it be exactly what this is. I mean, you know, I really do think that the Olympics were huge for Troy Terry and his development, just because of the kind of the position that he was put in. And he was, you know, he ended up by the end of the tournament becoming one of the more important players on the team. He had his mini TJ Oshie moment, I think, at World Juniors and in the Olympics, where he was doing, you know, 15 in a row shootout moves, stuff like that. I think it's really exciting for all the kids to be able to go, like you said. Like, it's tough to pass up, especially with how, I don't know, like, tenuous, I guess, the relationship between, like, the players and the league are as far as, like, the Olympics goes. You know, and then there are all the obvious, the COVID concerns. And, you know, like I said, I think it's weird that the World Juniors is bad, but the Olympics is fine. Yeah. But if there is something there that, you know, the players and everybody involved feel like it's safer, then, like, yeah, I think it would be great for Mason McTavish to go out there and play against a bunch of KHL guys on steroids. Like, I'm fine with that. I think that would be a blast.
That's more his level of competition at this point, I guess, than playing against 17-year-olds in the OHL.
Well, that's the thing. You're talking about him being so big. It's like him, even at the World Juniors, dude, like, he looked like Andy Reid in that old footage at the Rams game of, like, the kick, pass, punt, where Andy Reid is just looks like he's from a complete other planet, and these other kids, like, come up to his waist. Like, that's what Mason McTavish looks like out there. Like, the play that he got suspended for, like, I'm not saying it's a bad play, but, like, or it's a good play, but, like, how much of that play is changed by just how young everybody is? You know what I mean? Like, he's physically developed in a way that a lot of the guys in that league aren't. Yeah. And he, you know, dangerous hit, bad timing, but he's also just bigger, and that I think exacerbates kind of some of the problems with those kinds of hits. And so it's just like, you know, if you can get him in a place where he can kind of take the gloves off as far as his physicality, I think there is a lot for him to learn.
Yeah, and I mean, those games he played in at the World Junior Championship too, it was against like Austria and I think Germany.
Right.
Like, it was a cakewalk, to say the least, to go in against those games. Like, but it does give you a glimpse of, hopefully, like, when he is, if he hits his full potential at the NHL level, like, what you can expect, right? Like, you get that small kind of glimpse of his hands, like, and his shooting ability, things that weren't necessarily on full display all the time when he was had his 9-game stint with the Ducks, because obviously, you know, he's getting adjusted to the NHL level. So it is nice to kind of get that contrast where you can shake off some of those Nick Ritchie PTSD vibes where you're like, oh, man, like, he's just a big kid who can go to the net, where, okay, no, you can see that there's some skill here that you didn't necessarily get to see in that stint with the Ducks, which is nice, which I like to see from that, and that's what you want to see from these kids. What we said that about Comtois when he went to this tournament too, where you want to see them go and dominate and play well, because that's what they're expected to do. And especially for, again, we'll bring it up consistently here, but McTavish, a kid of his size and his skill set and ability right now, and his experience playing pro already overseas before in his draft year and then with the Ducks this year, like, he was expected to go in and do that. So for him to go in and fulfill that, those expectations are huge. And again, he'll be expected to go to the Olympics. And if Canada goes up against China or some of these other weaker teams, he'll be expected to do that as well. And I think he'll play a big role. You look at some of the names that were on this roster, like, he should be an important player, right? Like when there's no NHLers involved, these kids are probably the best bet that this team has. Like, when you've got guys like Brandon Leipzig and Jake Virtanen on the roster, they're going to be leaning heavy on McTavish and Perfetti and a few of the other guys that they brought.
Yeah, no, well, Owen Power is going to be there. But, I mean, yeah, like, I would imagine that, like, Power from McTavish and Perfetti are probably the top two centers for that team, even
– yeah.
You know, even if it being against, you know, fully grown, like I said, 35-year-old Russians who smoke a pack a day and are on steroids. Like,
well, even the junior teams. That story was ridiculous. They were vaping on the plane, and the coach was playing Russian rock music and just didn't care. I love that. It's so Russian. Just amazing.
Just absolute little assholes.
Yeah, but yeah, you would expect him to go to that tournament and play well. So.
But yeah. Yeah, I think they'll play big roles. It'll be interesting to see, right? Because like you said, like, you saw those clips of all those players in World Juniors, like all the high-end players, and like a lot of the clips came from like Canada and the U.S., but still, like, you know, where you see these guys just kind of take over a whole shift, and they just like play keep away from everybody else on the ice for 20, 30 seconds, and, you know, they're almost going from point all the way down and back to the point and then looping into the center. Like, McTavish had one shift like that where I think he pulled off that nifty backhand play where he just turned and he just went all the way up around the dots and turned back in. And it's just insane to see, you know, the level of skill that accompanies what is, you know, a power forward play as far as using his body and his size to muscle a guy, but to have the patience and the skill to make the play at the end of it is, I think, the thing about him that makes him so exciting.
Yeah, and the fun thing about it too is everybody kind of coming around on that pick too, right? It was a clear 1-2 in that draft, and then things got interesting with the Ducks at 3 on what they were going to do, and then McTavish gets picked, and I don't think I could correct myself if I was wrong. I don't think I ever said it was a bad pick, but there was guys I would have liked at that spot over McTavish. And even now, like, just looking at kind of the skill set that he brings and the different type of player that he, you know, will kind of slot into this roster versus what we already have, like, it just complements the pieces the Ducks already have so much. And it's just been nice to see him kind of prove the doubters wrong, myself included, that he deserved to go at that spot and is kind of vying potentially to be the best player from the draft, or at least the top prospect from that draft as things stand right now, just based off his play. Like, everywhere he's gone since the draft, he's dominant. He came to the NHL, looked like he belonged, but, you know, for the Ducks. They thought it'd be better served to him to play center in the OHL, and then he goes back there and scores a hat trick in his first game back, and goes right. into one of the most stacked Canadian teams that they've had in the last few years, and is probably the best player. I've seen a lot of people say that he was the best player at that tournament, and that's with guys like Connor Bedard playing the way that he did, having a 4-goal game, and Owen Power being the first overall pick in that same draft, scoring a hat trick in that tournament as well, for a lot of people to walk away from that and saying, yeah, he just looked like he was the best player there. Like, that's huge. It's a tough team to go into. There's a lot of good players that get lost in the shuffle in teams like mm-hmm. that, where they are top first round picks or top prospects for whatever team, and for whatever reason, like, they just get overshadowed by some guys on the team, and it's easy to do that, and especially for a player like McTavish, who, like, the skill isn't always evident at all times. Like, he's a big physical power forward, and for him to come out and just show all mm-hmm. facets of the game is huge. Like, it's really exciting when you then take into what Zegras is doing this year in the NHL right now and think, okay, if McTavish can take a step forward like that next year, and these guys really start getting going, and you know, there's no physical adjustment for McTavish into the NHL at any point. Like, he's ready to go. It's just how quickly does the offense and the skill start to come into his game at the NHL level. The light at the end of the tunnel gets a little bit closer with the way he's playing right now.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy, because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post, so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports, and support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Yeah, I mean, you know, like, again, like, it's kind of crazy, but where you get closer, you know, or I say, I feel more confident, I guess, every day that at some point we're going to see Zegras, McTavish, Lundestrom, Gru down the middle. Like, that's going to be the centers at some point in the next, I don't know, three, four years.
If Getzlaff retires at the end of the year,
and Henrique's
no longer a center on this team, like, that could be next year, right? Like, it would be Zegras 1, Lindstrom 2, McTavish 3, Gru 4, probably to start the year, and then, you know, never know, McTavish probably could take over 2C. But I think it's crazy that it could be as early as next year, depending on what happens with Getzlaff, that we see that, because there really isn't anybody else in the way, because Henrique has kind of been moved to the wing, and whether he's still here or not is up for debate as well. But with McTavish, it feels like the goal is to play him at center next year, so you really could see that.
Yeah, you know, and then you've got Pastiov, you've got Zellweger, you've got Perreault, you've got Tracy, you've got Thrun. Like, you've got all these other names that are kind of around right now, and it really makes, I just think, it makes this season very interesting and weird. In a good way, not in a bad way, but just, it just makes it kind of weird, because you can just feel, just based on kind of lineup choices and where players are in their careers, that, like, this season wasn't, like, obviously the season wasn't supposed to go this way, but it just feels like it's a weird time as far as where the two groups of players on this team are. You know, and it's like, how much of this do we go in on, right? Because, like, you know, in the NFL, it's basically the moment that you realize that your quarterback is legit, you have until the end of his rookie contract to get to use your best shots, right? Because once that rookie contract's up, you're going to have to pay him all that money. Well, as we're seeing star player contracts go up appropriately, that's going to start being even more the case, right? If you're going to start having to spend $9, $10, $12 million on some of these kids coming out of their first deal, because they're, you know, playing at that level and they're being allowed to perform at that level, like, then you only have a short amount of time, right? Like, you have to make the years on that ELC count. And, like, I think it's a little too early to say for this year for sure. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I very much want them to go all in on this year within reason. Like, all in is probably over-exaggerating, but, like, I want them to go for it this year. But I also don't think that you truly mortgage the future in any way to make a push this year. Next year, maybe it's a different conversation, right? Maybe Zegras looks that much better. Maybe McTavish is an everyday player. Holy shit, now what are we talking about?
I think for the Ducks, too, like, you can, you know, genuinely look into free agency this year and say, okay, who are some of the bigger players that we could potentially get over here and really make a push for it next year? Like, I think you have that flexibility based off the fact that they've been a surprise this year. They're, you know, one of the top teams in the Pacific Division. They've got an, you know, exciting core of young players. They'll still have got, you know, potentially, I think a lot of it depends on, like, who stays, like Lindholm, Manson, Raquel, guys like that. But if, like, let's say Lindholm is still here, you've got a good kind of defense core to build around. You could potentially go out and bring somebody in to replace Manson. You could bring in another top six or top nine forward to replace Raquel potentially. And then you've got a chance to really push for it next year, right? Like, you have the flexibility to do that. Or again, if you want to do it at the deadline, I think the Ducks could potentially do that this year, which is, again, not a spot we thought that they would be in this early on in the rebuild or retool or whatever you want to call it. The last thing I want to get into, we should mention that Zegras did win NHL Rookie of the Month for December, which was nice to see his play get rewarded. And making a push for the Calder Trophy. He needs to get back in the lineup here to put some more points up to catch Lucas Raymond. But it really feels like a two-horse race between those two at this point. You know, no disrespect to Sider or Drysdale or anybody, but it really is a
Zegras versus Raymond. I think Sider's going to have a lot to say just because of how physical he plays. Like, he's a big kid and he plays his size, and I just think that's the kind of thing that stands out in young players, and then when they're able to successfully throw their weight around, like, that kind of reverse hit on Pasternak was fantastic.
Was a game that Sider hit like three guys too? Was that against the Caps?
I don't remember, but like, he plays very big, and he's got the highlights and stuff, and, you know, a lot of people want defense, look, the reality is, I think there's narrative votes here, right? And how many people are going to vote for the big right shot defenseman over the, you know, goal scoring forward just because it's harder to play defense at a young age and he's doing it at such a high level? You know, I mean, he's probably the best blue liner on the team right now, right? Like, unless I'm forgetting somebody obvious.
No, yeah, he's their best blue liner. I mean, it's not a hard competition right now in Detroit to be their best blue liner, but it is still impressive, like, for sure.
That wasn't what he was supposed to be this year, right?
Well, yeah, and the fact that when the Red Wings and Yzerman took Sider where they did, similar, I guess, to McTavish as well, people were like, what? Like, why did you take this guy where? And now, I mean, they're laughing to the bank the way he's been playing this year. Again, not just the offense, because it's there, and I think he's almost at 20 points at this point, if not over that, but the physicality and, like, how quickly and comfortably he's kind of settled into that side of the game. I can't do this right now. Oh my god.
This is so bootleg right now. What the hell? We used to be semi-professionals. Jeez Louise. Oh, Eddie's thing is just completely, literally unhinged. Like, I don't, God, I just want to call play-by-play on him fighting with this stupid thing right now. But Eddie's an idiot. Moritz Seider is going to win the most votes for the Calder from Detroit. As a Detroit insider, I can say with a firm grasp that this is true. When Eddie is eventually done, I want to play a very fun game, which is who has the 10th highest cap hit coming off the books this year in free agency? Eddie, are you there? Hello, Edward. Did you hear what I said? I can. I don't know if anybody else can, but I can.
It wasn't picking up. My God. Oh.
All right. Here's what we're going to do. For the free agents this summer, right? Who has the 10th highest salary cap coming off the books?
Who has the, like, the 10th most salary coming off the books this year in the NHL?
Sorry. One player, what player is making the 10th largest contract to come off the books?
Damn, because there's some big contracts coming off. Is it Bergeron? Or is he up there? Huh?
Bergeron is 11.
Damn, I don't know. Who is it?
But he's tied in salary. It's Ryan Kesler.
What is the point of this? Just to bring up some sadness here that is he's finally off the books for the Ducks?
No, it's not even sadness. I just think it's like legitimately incredible that they've got almost $7 million in no money in nothing being spent.
Yeah, true. They're not even using. They're not even using that. Yeah,
but they're not using. Like, I honestly, when you were like talking about being players in free agency, like, I got a little sheepish just because, you know, how much of a premium are you going to have to play to come to Anaheim? But at the same time, like, I think Zegras maybe makes it easier to get forwards than defenders.
A good team this year as well, that helps on your pitch to these players. And there's some good players, and again, maybe not guys you're going to want to pursue long term contracts for, like, you know, the Johnny Gaudreaus or the Nazem Kadris or you know, Ryan Strome, Thomas Hertl. Like, those are going to Philip Forsberg. Like, there's some big names. They're going to demand term and money, but I do think they're. Are a lot of guys that you can look at and say, okay, there could be some interest there from both sides of it.
Eddie.
I can't.
It's Phil. It's got to be Phil.
It makes, would be a cheap option for sure.
I'm telling you, who like, is there anybody else who would be as much fun to sign?
Yeah, on a one-year deal? No. Well, deal? Maybe Pavelski, maybe.
Like that Pavelski Mike Hoffman deal a couple years ago? Deal,
but, yeah.
Oh, dude. Bring me to
Pavelski and Kessel on one-year deals.
Just
one last chance at the cup in Anaheim.
Could you imagine those two playing with Getzy on like a third line on just like an old man? That would rock.
Be a lot of fun.
Well, that's it, guys. That's what I've decided I want now is Pavelski, Getzy, and Phil Kessel to be the third line for Anaheim.
All right, last thing we have to get into before I end the show here, before my mic falls a third time. Pierre LeBrun tweeted out that the Ducks have formed a GM search committee, which I love, because I feel like I've never heard of this being a thing or, like, publicly been put out there that they have a search committee. Like, clearly, it happens, and every team has one. I just don't think I've ever seen put out here that, you know, these are the guys in the search committee and they're looking. But for the Ducks, it's Niedermeyer, Paul Kariya, Michael Schulman, who's the Ducks CEO, and President of Business Operations Aaron Teets, who is also Jason's favorite person. And then the owners, of course, Henry and Susan Samueli. But interesting, maybe not so Scotty, because he's been involved with the organization a fair amount, coaching and whatnot. I know he's taking a step back now, but Paul Kariya being a part of that is interesting, to say the least, that he's at least been convinced or taking an interest in, you know, in hockey again and being a part of the Ducks organization, which is fine. We've seen him kind of slowly ease back into that role. I it could very simply be, hey, we're looking at this guy. What are your thoughts? Like, it's probably not a very big role for him, but it's nice to see him involved. And some update here that the Ducks are starting to push along this decision-making process here. I think on Insider Trading, Pierre LeBrun also said that the Ducks are going to be reaching out to candidates in the next week or so here, or to teams and candidates to see that if they could have an interview with them. So the process is beginning. It's at least starting, which means by maybe February, we have an answer. February, March, we have an answer to what, or at least have the list narrowed down to a few different candidates, hopefully. And that's when we'll see LeBrun and Dreger and other guys kind of, you know, narrow it down for us and give us the candidates here. But it's good that the process is at least kicking up here and is underway.
Yeah, I thought the the search committee kind of thing was a really interesting thing to, like, I guess in a way go public with. I thought the names on the list, you know, the two business side of it all makes sense, right? They're going to have to find somebody that they can work with, and they're probably, after the Bob Murray era, going to want to restructure some of this as far as the way, you know, power and reporting and all that stuff is kind of controlled and stuff. But like you said, the big surprise was Paul Kariya being on there. But the other one that I thought was really interesting is that Todd Marchant wasn't involved. He's the head of player development for Anaheim, and we know that he's been very active and active in that role for them, right? Like, he's the guy who's traveling to, like, you know, to all, like, the high schools in Boston, right, where they keep drafting these kids in the 4, 5, 6 rounds. Like, you know, he's talked about going and watching those kids play and speaking to them, and you know, he's the guy that's going to be working with, you know, players like Sam Colangelo, right, who are going to be maybe development players but have something there. And I think, you know, to not have him in there, like, I'm sure there's a reason, maybe he just doesn't, but it's just an interesting thing to me because he feels like, based on his role, that he would be a very easy person to include.
And you know,
process.
He might be a guy that behind the scenes they say, hey, like, when the final process comes into it, you know, when it stops being a search and it's like, hey, these are our top five candidates, you know, this is, you know, our pros and cons to each of our guys, what do you think? And then maybe he gets involved into that discussion at that point, because I feel like of all the people, he's probably the guy that has the least time right now to contribute to, like, the search party, right, where it's like, okay, we're gonna look and compile our list, and that's the point we're at right now. And he seems like more of a guy, like, when the decision needs to be made, he can probably be included in that discussion.
Do you think this means there's a chance?
I was going to bring that up. I don't know. Like,
because I didn't even think about it until I kind of shut the fuck up and stopped talking. But it did kind of dawn on me, like, wait a minute. You know, Solomon isn't involved in this process either. Madden isn't involved in this process either.
Well, Madden, Nonis, and understanding. Solomon are candidates, as much as you want to call them. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying, right? So, like, that's the easy one where you're like, okay, those are why those three names are whatever. Two. I'm not known as.
Well,
not,
maybe for Todd serious. Too, it's the closeness of working with all three of those guys on a regular basis, where it does become a bit of an awkward conversation, right?
Yeah, I don't know. I just it occurred to me maybe that, like, he could be kind of Chris Drury-ish as far as, like, coming up through the organization and you
yep.
know, at
I'm,
least
I'm
putting
sure
in.
I'm sure it's come up and right as my in their conversations as a potential guy that could be part of that. He could be part of the long list, the 10-15 names that they start with and narrow down and go from there. I don't see why not. He's been with the organization for a while and he's been a big part of their player development, obviously. As per his role, so he could be a guy that's considered. I just think, you know, there's at least two clear candidates already in the organization in front of him. I can't imagine, like, even with Dave Nonis, they slap four of their own guys on there. I would imagine they know there's a clear favorite in the organization already as a candidate. I can't imagine they would include two guys from in the organization on that list. You know, they know Martin Madden, obviously, but Jeff Solomon, I think, would be at the forefront of that. The fact that he's interim GM is telling, I think. So he's probably the guy that from inside the organization is at the top of their list. Martin Madden, maybe, because he also is getting interest from other teams. Carolina was the most recent one to be reported that had wanted to talk to him and considered him. I think Montreal, too, right? So
this is Montreal, because that's the thing, is he speaks French and he would be a perfect, because, like, technically he'd be a first time GM, so that would be somebody perfect to bring in under Jeff Gorton.
Oh,
and kind of you know, and as we've seen with Martin Madden, like, he seems to have a penchant for drafting, which I know some people in Montreal feel has been an issue for them in the past as far as drafting and developing their players. But I want to ask you along those lines, like, if Madden doesn't get the job, do you think,
I think
he's
somebody,
gone this
somebody
summer?
Will bring him in. There's a lot of teams looking for a general manager. Vancouver's another one of those teams as well that I think his pedigree. And again, another team who's struggled a bit with their drafting has been Vancouver, where I think I think he's going to be at the top of a lot of teams' list for just what he's done for the Ducks over the last couple of years. And then you look at guys that he's been a part of drafting, like Troy Terry, who have taken just a massive leap this year. That puts a lot of people on notice and puts him kind of at the forefront of discovering him, if you want to call it that. And he's already had interest for teams and been involved in discussions in the past. So I think for both Montreal and Vancouver, he'll probably be one of those 10 guys that are on their list that will get an interview. And like you pointed for Montreal, the fact that he speaks French, and Pierre LeBrun made a point to point out that it's pronounced Martin Madden on Insider Trading.
Oh, did he?
Never heard it pronounced like that before, which was great. But I think, I think awesome. That definitely puts them high on Montreal's list. They're going to need somebody who's bilingual. It's just part of their organizational structure. It's something they always do. So that limits already who they can kind of go after if that's one of the things that they want to key in on, which I know it is. So he'll be on that list. And, you know, guys that have already been mentioned, like Danny Briere and a few others are high on their list as well. But I would imagine he's gone this year if he doesn't become the next GM of the Anaheim Ducks. I think the logical next step for him is to become a GM. And I think there will be a team that will be willing to take him on. You know, it's not just Montreal, Vancouver, and Anaheim that are going to be looking. There are going to be other teams that move on from general managers probably in the offseason that will also be looking at him. So I imagine he lands somewhere. And Montreal, for me, is a likely destination just based on his pedigree. I can't, like, I don't know what Danny Briere's been doing since playing, but I don't know how he's so high on a lot of these teams' lists.
He's been a junior GM.
Well, that's not too bad then.
He's been a GM for the last few years of like an ECHL team or an AHL team or something like that.
Kyle Dubas.
Like he's been running a team, which is why his name. Yeah, it's pretty dope. That would be cool. I remember Danny Briere was cool as hell. All right, so I'm gonna put you on the spot here. Let's say they come to you and they say, Eduardo, we want your opinion. Going into next season, who do you want to be the GM and who do you want to be the head coach?
I think with a lack of knowing all the candidates, my answer is still Jeff Solomon for the general manager. There's some good names out there, but I think there's a lot to be said from just kind of already being in the job. And the experience that Jeff Solomon has already. Now, you know, I could feel differently after the trade deadline, so we'll have to go into that one again. But yeah, I think right now my answer is still Jeff Solomon. As for the head coach, that's a tough one. It comes down to the candidates that are available, but I'm still not sold on Dallas Eakins. This is a huge audition for him, right? And he does deserve credit for what he's done this year. Like, don't get me wrong. He's been a part of the Ducks' success as much as anybody. But I just don't know if he is the guy to take them to that next level yet. I feel like, and it's been publicly put out there, that he's a coach that kind of needs a lot of help in a lot of areas, at least tactically and strategically, where you bring in a lot of these guys to support him there.
I mean... Yeah, I was going to say, they brought in, what, 3 or 4 new coaches under him, and the team looks completely different, and he's made a point of talking about him delegating special teams, which are the team's 2 biggest strengths right now, ironically. Like, you know what I mean? So, like, as good as he has done, and I think he has done a good job, and I do think that he has been a big part of them implementing the kind of new system of being a more attacking team, I still think there are some legitimate questions. We're going to get so much trouble.
I already know.
I think there are still some legitimate questions about, like you said, like his long-term viability as a legitimate coach. For me, the one coach that I have become fascinated with as this team has gotten better is Claude Julien.
Yeah, that's one that's routinely been brought up.
Claude Julien to come in structurally with a young offensive players like, you know, McTavish and Zegras, dude, like, that is very exciting prospect for me, especially because, you know, he's going to be getting a very good goalie.
And this is probably a bad comparison. I'm already noticing it when I say it, but like Vancouver going from Travis Green, relatively young and experienced coach, who kind of brought them to, you know, through that development phase to go from that to Bruce Boudreau to a guy who's had more experience and has won in this league before and has been a part of, you know, on the coaching staff for very successful teams. You know, the Ducks are kind of in need of that switch for next year, I would think, or at least, you know, I just don't think you can bring Dallas Eakins back on a one-year show me deal. I just don't think you can.
No, he's got to get like a 3-year deal at minimum. So if he's, Dallas Eakins. I would love it if he was the guy to make this step, because I just think, you know, goes to Edmonton, fails, leaves Edmonton, nothing really gets better in Edmonton. Not really his fault. Goes to the AHL, works his way up, plays, you know, a great few years with those goals teams, steps up to the big club, struggled a little bit, oh, blah, blah, blah. Now, you know, yay. Like, that rocks. I'm a huge fan of that. But objectively, I think there is still plenty of things to be skeptical of as far as whether or not that's really the way that this is going to go. And like I said, like, it seems now that you could say at the very least, like, Segers is legit. And if he is, you have to jump on that window quick. The quicker you can put that team in place to be competitive, like really competitive, the better it is. And if you can get an experienced championship level coach like Claude Julien to come in, put in a system, and know that you're going to have young skilled players being able to come in and fill out roster spots as you get forward, plus, you know, you've got a star. Now you've got a veteran coach. Now you're in California. Now maybe Anaheim looks a little bit better. You know, I mean, I think of this is going to sound stupid, but I remember when the Kings signed Rob Scuderi after he won the cup in Pittsburgh. Like, that to me, like at that time, that was like, oh shit, like people like take LA seriously now, you know? And, you know, it's very interesting.
It's going to be an important decision. I still think the picking the general manager is the most important decision, but you know, you need to bring in a guy who is still going to allow Zegras to do the things that he's doing, right? Like we take that for granted a little bit and saying, you know, Dallas Eakins has been pretty open with the players and saying, you know, letting them kind of express themselves creatively. You need to bring in a guy who's still going to be able to do that. And like you said, I would love for Dallas Eakins to be the coach and be that guy. I just don't know if he's that type of coach yet. Like, if he's the guy that will take them to, you know, the Western Conference Final, the Stanley Cup Final, and be a competitive team. There's just no pedigree there to say it could be him. And then there's no, you know, they're coaching by committee this year, which obviously every team does because every team has their assistants and their guys who handle their special teams, but it just feels like the Ducks are doing it a little bit more where it's like, you know, each guy is kind of doing their one little thing where it's not like the main guy. Like, it's weird that Dallas Eakins doesn't feel like the main guy who's like controlling the ship right now as the head coach. And I don't know. It sounds like nonsense, but it just I don't have that feeling about him yet that he really is that guy to take him to the next level, despite the Ducks playing well. I think a lot of things just went right. Like, they brought in the special teams coaches, and that's turned around. And then Troy Terry's just become, you know, the player we hoped he would be. And Trevor Zegras has taken a big step forward this year. Like, how much of those are on the players than the coach, right? And then how much does he benefit from those guys just, you know, being better this year and taking steps forward? So and how much have they done that because of him, right? So it's hard to kind of say who has contributed to what at this point. It's such a tough decision to pick if he's the right guy, because it is, I think it'd be more beneficial for the Ducks if he had one more year after this one to really, you know, key in and see if he's the guy. But the fact that his contract's up at the end of this year, it really does kind of force that decision on you right now, where I highly doubt he would accept a one-year show-me contract. Like you said, it would be probably at least a 3-year deal that he would want to lock himself into some security there, right? And he's got the success of this year to back that up when he goes into those contract discussions, if he does get to that point to say, hey, like, I deserve a longer-term deal. Look what we did this year.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree with that, you know. I think the point you made about almost wanting another year it makes a lot of sense. It's funny because, you know, going into this year, it was kind of the best case scenario. Like, one of the like hidden benefits was that Akins and Murray were both on the last year of their deal. And so it was like, okay, like, no matter what this year is, like, if this goes the way that we think it's going to go, like, it's easy for the whole organization to cut bait. They can just kind of walk away from everybody. It's clean. Murray's already left, so that part's taken out of it. But now you have this GM search, and in the middle of that, you have this team that's overperforming. You've got Akins, who's, you know, seems to be doing a lot of the right things as far as changing the style of play, you know, getting the specialties play, getting a lot out of these younger players who he worked with in San Diego. I saw a cool tweet from the Gulls tonight that 13 of the 20 players in the lineup had gone played for the Gulls at some point
in the last three seasons. So it's been a recent pipeline, which is nice.
Yeah. And some of that is, you know, a little, the numbers are a little inflated by like Buddy Robinson, Vinny Lettieri, but still, like, you know, they played a lot of young guys. I mean, Kindop's only 22. You know what I mean? It's not like he's, you know, 30 year.
It's cool for him to get his debut against Carter Hart too. They played together in Everett, which was kind of fun. Yeah, there was somebody put out I think it was the Silvertips, the Everett Silvertips themselves, they put out a video of Kindop's first shot in the NHL was against Carter Hart, and he saved it, and then Hart walked over to him, gave him a little nudge and smiled at him. So, because they spent, like, I think that all rocks. 4 years of their time in Everett together playing, which is pretty cool.
Oh, that's dope. But yeah, look, they're good problems to have, right? Like, it's the best headache to have as far as the way the season is developed, and even as the team does maybe come down to earth a little bit, you know, again, how much of that is some of the roster mix up and some of the just the injuries kind of, you know, overlapping in odd ways mixed with the COVID protocol and that kind of stuff. But they look comfortably like the fourth best team in the division.
Yeah, I think they're right in the mix with well, even Vegas is gotten to another level.
Vegas are the top two teams
when fully healthy, clear number one. They've had no Eichel, now they have no Eichel and no Pacioretty, so it's a tough go for them. I think they lost tonight again, after they were kind of getting on a roll, so the Ducks can gain some ground here. But yeah, for me it's Vegas, and I think Calgary is number two. And then I think Anaheim's right in the mix there with Edmonton and Vancouver as the fourth best team in the division. Third best team in the division, sorry.
I kind of really want to be a homer and say that other than having two of the five best offensive players in the world, you know, I don't know how much better, if at all, that Oilers roster is.
It's not much.
Ducks roster.
Yeah, they don't have much outside of those guys.
Are Rico and Nugent Hopkins a
wash? I would give the slight edge to Nugent Hopkins, but not by a mile, right? Like, it's...
Sure.
And how much of Nuge's production is playing with either Draisaitl or McDavid when he was having his top years, right? So it's easy to say that, but you know, the depth of their roster, there isn't much there for the Oilers. There hasn't been, and the goaltending again is a huge issue for them, with Koskinen and Smith not really playing that well. So outside of McDavid and Draisaitl, you take, you know, again, having basically the two best players in the entire league on your roster, there isn't much there to separate you from the Ducks, where the Ducks have a little bit more depth spread out across each position than what the Oilers have. They don't, you know, the Ducks don't have those star, superstar level type players yet, but they've...
Like, is Lindholm better than Darnell Nurse?
I would say yes. I think most people, yeah. I'm not a huge fan of Darnell Nurse, because I think he gets inflated 5-on-5 production and power play production from playing with McDavid and Draisaitl. And then defensively...
You don't think he's going to shoot 20% every year for the rest of his career?
Because he's big, they're like, oh yeah, he's good defensively, but then you look at the numbers. Yeah, so they're like, good defensively. Like, you look at his numbers, he's just really not. He's god-awful defensively. He's like...
Yeah, he's kind of just like randomly an offensive defenseman that just looks like he should be,
five hits and five blocks a night, and you're like, okay, he must be good, but he just when you look at the underlying numbers, he's just not great defensively. So I would say Lindholm, yeah, is better than him. And you put Lindholm in that same situation in Edmonton, he's probably putting up 40, 50 points, right? Playing, if he's playing first power play or even second power play and playing, you know, top 5-on-5 minutes with McDavid and Draisaitl, he's probably doing that, doing what Darnell Nurse did, probably scratching the surface of 20 goals, because Lindholm can put up 10, 11, 12, 13 goals on a regular basis. He's on pace for 13 goals this year after getting one tonight, or well, what we thought was one tonight, but he's still on pace for around, you know, 12, 13 goals, which is around his kind of career high in his average. So, yeah, I would say Lindholm is definitely better there. Obviously, Gibson is the better netminder, and Stolarz might be better than both Mike Smith and Koskinen, you could argue. But yeah, like it's tough. And then Vancouver, I think they look like a, you know, I've always liked their roster and the players they have. I thought they were better than the way they were playing. And Bruce Boudreau came in and they've won like 6 in a row with him being there. I think their roster is fairly similar to what Anaheim has. They've got, you know, Demko's started to play a lot better.
Yeah. That's fair. I think that's, yeah, I probably overlooked them a little bit because you got Besser, you've got Horvat, you've got JT Miller
on the blue line. So
I mean, and then obviously you've got,
so I think they are better than a lot of people give them credit for. But again, like they're not that much better, if better at all, than the Ducks or than the Oilers. And again, the only thing they're missing is the McDavid Draisaitl. So I think that's why all three of those teams are kind of in the mix there. And I don't think I think Calgary is further off Vegas than they are, you know, away from the Ducks and the Oilers and the Canucks.
From the Ducks.
So I think there's a healthy mix of those four teams in there where Vegas, when fully healthy, they're clearly the best. Like once they get Eichel and Pacioretty back and they start to kind of push into playoff time, I don't think anybody in this division matches them. But those other four teams are kind of right in the mix there. And I guess the Kings have kind of worked themselves into that discussion a little bit too, right? They've been playing better lately.
Look, dude, coming into the season, I had pretty high expectations for the Kings, and they've done nothing but let me down, which, you know, I should have seen coming. But, you know, like, would you rather have Markstrom or Leonard?
Markstrom right now, yeah. I'd rather have Markstrom. And I don't know if that's just because the way Calgary plays under Daryl Sutter is more beneficial, right? So it's tough.
But he played really well in Vancouver that last year he was there too. That's the thing. Like, we've seen him be very good. I don't think it's entirely system. I think he's a good goalie. And I think Leonard's probably better.
It's close.
But, you know,
I think you can look at Vlader's numbers in Calgary this year, the backup, and not to say he's been bad, but, you know, his numbers are great this year. He's 5-1-1 with a .928 save percentage. Like, that team just plays really well defensively. I think they are the second best defensive team in the league right now, whereas Vegas is 18th. Mm-hmm. So there's something to be said about that. I think they're fairly close. When you look at them, you know, stylistically and what, you know, what they are as individual players, individual netminders, I think they're fairly close, Markstrom and Lehner. But I'd give myself a slight edge to Markstrom, but it's not by a lot.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. The Pacific Division's really weird.
Well, the only thing that you can say for sure is Seattle and San Jose are they're out of it for sure.
Oof, man, Seattle, hey. Good lord. Would you, let me ask you this. If it was just cost you a second round pick, would you trade for Mark Giordano at the deadline?
If I was Anaheim, no. If I was another team, maybe. Anaheim, I wouldn't do it. I don't think there's a need for him. But with Fowler and Lindholm, I just don't see the...
You don't think... I'm being serious. Like, you don't think a Giordano, Shattenkirk, third
pair... For a second round pick, I don't see why I would bring in a guy to play 15, 16 minutes a night for a second round pick.
But here's my question. Is that what would happen? Or would it just, they all kind of play 19, 20 minutes a night? Like, because if you bring Giordano in and he can steady out Shattenkirk a little bit, like, I can't believe I'm saying this, but it's just something I'm thinking about with Seattle being fucking garbage. You know, I wonder if, you know, like, to the same extent that Claude Giroux or Phil Kessel are ideal targets in that they're expiring vets, on big contracts that are going to be harder for those teams to move at the deadline. Like, you know, I just wonder if Anaheim walks up with like a second round pick and I don't know, help Braden Tracy or something, right?
I think if they were going to go all in, it's not a bad move. I'm not quite at that point yet, but you know, if you're going to go all in and look at guys like Kessel and JVR, and then why not look at Giordano and use your cap space to your advantage and you know, pay less for some of these guys that still have value but less teams would be interested in, so the price isn't going to be as high as it is for some of the top UFAs at the deadline. So I think he'll get moved. I think there are teams that have the cap space and Seattle can eat 50%, and that he's just a better fit in because he's going to play on the left side. I don't like paying a second round pick, even if he's going to play 19 for a third pairing guy. Like, I would rather him be in my top four and playing a strong side and being put in a position to succeed.
Yeah, I get that.
I see the advantage to bringing him in. Like, he is a great player to bring in. If you want to make a cup run, you need an experienced veteran defenseman who still has some gas left in the tank. Like, there's appeal there for sure.
Like, if you could get both of them at 50% retained, would that not be – even – let's say, you know, they go out in the first round or whatever, right? Like, if you can get both of them retained for 50% and not have to give up next year's first – and you add Gio and Phil, isn't that a win at the deadline? If you're in an aggressive, like, if you're comfortably in third, right? Like, you know, if you go out and you're like, all right, we're getting another top six center, another top six winger, and another top four defenseman, and now we're going to be, you know, all of a sudden we have one of the deepest blue lines around just because the left side is so strong.
You know what is the ultimate power move for me is replacing Raquel and Manson with Kessel and Giordano. So moving Raquel and Manson out for more of a return and paying, you know, third round picks or I guess a second or whatever for Giordano and Kessel. So getting more in return for Raquel and Manson and bringing those two in as expiring deals just to still, again, you don't lose out on the assets that you should be getting something for, but you're bringing in guys.
Big fan of this.
Push on the run for the playoffs, and it's not costing you a lot. Again, a second round pick feels a little rich for me, but
I mean, it's going to be what?
Yeah, exactly. So I think, you know, if you say a second for one and a third plus a prospect for another, and you get, you know, another first for Raquel and a second plus for Manson, so you're kind of offsetting the assets there. You just kind of swap some guys out and swap some picks around, and you got another first instead to replace that second. Like, I could justify that in the sense that, you know, you didn't really lose anything. You got a little bit of an increase in your assets and where you're going to be drafting, and you still can make a run without having to lose some of these guys for nothing. But again, at that point, if you're evening out on the assets, what's better to have? Is it better to just keep Raquel and Manson and go for the run with the guys you have, or have Kessel and Giordano?
Right.
So it's tough at that point. It's a really tough kind of balancing act to walk the line and decide what the Ducks should do, which makes the trade deadline that much more interesting for us this year.
Yeah, no, it's going to be fun. It's going to be a blast. But we're running on an hour and a half. We should probably get out of here because I think it's Friday for
about,
you now.
About that. It's been a while since we did a late post-game show, so surprise.
I know, man. It's kind of nice.
But, hey, you had Troy Terry hat-trick watch, so we had. I like how we went through this an hour and 24 minutes and didn't discuss Troy Terry's hat-trick.
What was there to say? Like, he played really fucking well tonight, but
only two guys have more goals than him, Draisaitl and Ovechkin. That's impressive.
Suck it, Connor. I have a personal vendetta against Connor McDavid. I don't know why. It's fine. But Charlie O'Connor of The Athletic mentioned, he was like, the reason I'm not tweeting about this game is there's not much to tweet about. And, like, it kind of felt like that. Like, right? Like, the game was to some degree engaging. Like, there was stuff going on. Like, there was the whole Lindholm Konechny thing, which was great. You know, there was like stuff that happened, but the game itself, there wasn't really a ton that was super notable.
It was a boring 4-1 you know, win, if you want to call it that. Like, it was still, it was a fun game to watch, but it wasn't like
ho-hum,
action-packed.
Yeah.
It was...
It's kind of, it's exactly what you expect a Tuesday regular season
well, one
January
where
game
the
to be.
Best players on both teams are missing due to COVID protocol. So... you know, no Giroud, no Kucherov, no Provorov, no Getzlaf, no Zegras, no Henrik. Like, it's kind of what you expect, right? So, yeah. It's because 20 minutes of it was talking about Mrs. Met. And another 20 minutes talking about Mason McTavish at the Olympics. So that's how we talked 90 minutes about this game.
Just ridiculous.
All right. Well, it was a lot of fun getting back on the show. We are going to be back regularly, hopefully, as long as the NHL keeps playing hockey games. We'll be back with our weekly shows. I would imagine we would have one this weekend, hopefully, with the guys to get another weekly show going. For anybody who's wondering what's going on with Ducks Morning Brew, the fact that I live in Ontario, Canada, makes it difficult for me right now to get up and do these shows. Kids haven't gone back to school, and that's been pushed back. So for me to get up and record those shows has been tough. So it's not dead. It's on a little bit of pause right now until I can figure that out, until my daughter goes back to school and I have a bit more time to record that in the morning. So hoping to kick that back up in the next couple of weeks here and cover some of the kind of obscure topics that we want to cover that we can't cover on every show. But we dove into a lot of those that we would have normally covered on Ducks Morning Brew tonight, which was kind of nice to get into that. But planning on kicking that back up again, hopefully soon, just whenever the Ontario government can figure things out and get things back to normal here, which I know is the case for a lot of you out there, but... Getting that backed up again. So,
Ducks Morning Brew is in COVID protocol,
and I might be in soon. I'm feeling not too great right now, so it could be the fact that it's 2:38.
My god,
we'll see. Yeah, but thanks to everybody who came out live and is still here an hour and a half in after this game.
Yeah, what the fuck are you people doing? Go to bed.
We'll keep you guys updated on the weekly show. Hopefully Pat and Jason, if not both of them, can join us this weekend and we can have a full crew. For all our Patreon members, no, we didn't forget about you. We are Steven and I have a lot of bonus ideas that we want to get into that we're going to find time to record. And then whenever we can get the majority of us together, we will record a Pucks and Brews. That's kind of been the big stumbling block, is getting at least three of us on to do the Pucks and Brews. So hopefully we can put one of those out soon, maybe do another watch along as well. Career Forever in the chat said they're still hosts. Yes, they're still hosts. Pat and Jay are still a major part of the show. We'll hopefully get them back on as soon as they're ready and able to. Yes.
Spiritually. They're here with us.
But thanks everybody for coming out tonight. Thanks everybody who listened after the fact. It's nice to be back, and we'll see you hopefully this weekend.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.